2003 Media. I'm Campbell Barron, and this is The Ones Who Succeed. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Sorry for being a bit late there, but yeah, I'm excited to do this.
Well, I'm thrilled you're here. And before we start, if you can just move over to the right here or left, because what is in your background?
What is that? Basketball net.
All right, that's on brand. On brand.
Yep. Very much.
I love it. And you're based in Toronto?
Based in Toronto. Yep. Live right here.
Fantastic. So today on the show, I'm thrilled to have a conversation with Swish Goswami. Swish is quite the accomplished serial entrepreneur, having co-founded and sold a wearable tech company, followed by a basketball-themed digital media company called Dunk. And in addition, he's an angel investor in FaZe. However, there is one thing I'm leaving out of the equation. Did I mention Swish is only 23 years old? Yeah, Swish is currently the co-founder of TrueFan, and if that company rings a bell, I actually interviewed TrueFan's other co-founder, Onyx Claire, back on episode 21, so have a listen to that one if you like. Nevertheless, like Onyx, Swish is also quite an inspiring entrepreneur, and joined this program via Zoom to discuss his origin story, the art of entrepreneurship at a young age, and of course his personal ambitions for the years to come. This is The Ones Who Succeed. I'm Campbell Barron. My conversation with Swish Goswami starts now. Who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Swish Goswami. I am a 23-year-old entrepreneur. I run a business called TrueFan. We're a social intelligence platform that helps brands make smarter marketing decisions using data. Past being an entrepreneur, I love speaking. So I speak under a bureau called Speaker Spotlight, and I speak around the world on mental health and on entrepreneurship. I've written a book on youth entrepreneurship that was supposed to come out this year, but sadly got pushed back to next year. So be it. And I also love sharing content online. So on Instagram and LinkedIn are my two platforms where, again, I share content very specific on mental health and entrepreneurship, the two topics that I care a lot about.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been pretty much an entrepreneur for your entire life. And I will say, going on your LinkedIn, I'll do some research pre-interview, and I've chatted with quite a few accomplished people, and going on your LinkedIn profile is just exhausting, man. There is just too much to cover. it's a flex, but we can't go through all of it here, but I want to talk about a few kind of key moments that led up to what you're doing with TrueFan. But I guess my first question diving into that is, how did you get interested in entrepreneurship in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I have always grown up with a very competitive mindset and a mindset that I didn't want to have a quote, and this is bad to say, I think, but it's the truth of what I felt when I was younger is I didn't want to have an ordinary life. You know, I didn't want to go to college, graduate, find a job at 22, have that job until I got married at 34, 35, whatever it was, and then, you know, have kids and then retire at 52 and just die. I didn't want to have that life. And so I knew at an early age that whatever path I chose, I needed to be different. I needed to stand out from people. I would never have dreamt, though, that like when I was 7, 10, 15 years old, I never would have dreamt that that abnormal path would have been dropping out of college, moving to the most expensive city in the world, working, and then starting a company and moving from Vancouver to Toronto. That is definitely not what I had in mind. But I think that kind of mindset towards wanting to have a different lifestyle made me do things as a kid that was different from what other kids did. And it's not saying that I didn't play video games and I didn't play sports and I didn't care about what 15-year-olds love to care about. But I was also very like ambitious when it came to joining clubs, like debate, for example, at a very early age in grade 7 and doing fairly well in debate, or joining junior achievement when I was 2 years younger from anyone else in the program, but just still wanting to do it to get a first taste on starting a business. So I feel like I put myself out there a lot.
And where are you originally from? Are you from Canada or are you from elsewhere?
So I was born in Singapore. I grew up until I was 9 years old, and then I moved to Calgary, Alberta, which is possibly the worst transition to make in life, is to go from like the most clean city to the coldest city in the world. But yeah, Calgary is where I spent junior high and high school.
One of the legit companies you founded was a wearable tech company. You also co-founded Dunk Media, which essentially brought you to New York. And so I want to go into that. What was the opportunity you saw with Tektronix? And that was a few years ago.
That was a few years ago. That was my first semester of second year of college. So I had just wrapped up a political internship down in Washington, D.C. I still had that mindset of like, I want to be a lawyer. And then I get a phone call from my debate partner in high school. He was at Wharton. He was also doing a life sci, like he was doing a dual degree. So life sciences and Wharton Business School. And he had done some incredible things growing up. So when he was in grade 12, he had won the Sanofi BioGenius Challenge for creating a cure for cancer. So he had built a cure for cancer using gold nanoparticles that fired against cancer cells. He went to like the International Science and Engineering Fair and he got a podium finish there. So he was a really smart guy. He was my debate partner as well. And he went to university and he came out of university. He was a bit older than me. He came out of university with this idea for wearables technology. So a technology that any basketball player, any NHL player, any MLB player could wear, and in real time, it could tell their coaches or trainers how susceptible they were to getting injured based on the movements, based on their kind of diagnostics overall. So he came to me mainly because I did have quite a bit of a network when it came to having a lot of great high net worth individuals that I'd met, or also just knowing a couple of athletes. And as I grew and like became in second year, and especially when I moved to New York, like I started to know a lot more NBA players in particular. So he knew that if he was to work with me, he'd be able to get this incredible testing ground to work on the technology and really grow it. So that's exactly what we did. You know, testing the technology out brought me to a guy named Trevor Booker. Trevor Booker played for the Brooklyn Nets at the time. He came on as like our chief advisor for the project. And along with connecting us to pretty much every trainer in the NBA, he also offered me a job at the end of our period working on the company. At the end of the period of working on the company, we licensed our technology out, and my co-founder decided to work for the company that licensed the tech out fully. And I decided that rather than going down that path, I wanted to work with Trevor and build out this venture capital firm with him. So it still exists. It's called JB Fitzgerald. It was a 3-month internship that I did. I expected to potentially work there longer, but that's when Dunk came into my life and I decided to go down that opportunity as well.
And it's crazy. That's crazy. That's a really interesting series of events. And it really plays into just the power of a network, I think. Really important. And so Dunk. So this was 2016, 2017?
This would be 2017. Yep.
You know, social media is around. There are, you know, Instagram, best crosses, there are, you know, feeds that kind of service basketball fans. But what specifically did you see that could present an opportunity for a new type of media company? And how did that opportunity come about?
So I think there's two things we noted. One thing was that today, the 18 to 24 year old demographic that's in urban areas like Chicago, LA, New York, Toronto, that love basketball, for example, they don't consume basketball highlights or, for that matter, anything related to basketball. So news, culture, anything around it, they don't consume that on TV as much anymore. And they're constantly consuming it on social media. And so we thought, okay, number one, there's a clear demographic that brands would love to target. That 18 to 24 year old demographic is prime. It's exactly what advertisers are trying to advertise to. And then B, what are the types of things that SportsCenter and ESPN can't post due to compliance and legal that we can post as a grassroots page, right? So that was stuff around memes or including the up and coming rap like songs as a background for a highlight of a person dunking, and also featuring high school players and featuring younger players that the ESPN and sports centers of the world would not know about because they're not on the grassroots level yet. And that's actually really cool because one of the accounts that we had kind of coming up with us was House of Highlights, right? House of Highlights was, I think, 4 or 5 million followers above us when I started working with Dunk. They're now at like 12 million followers and they got bought out by Bleacher Report. And it's interesting that the person who started House of Highlights, Omar, he now works for SportsCenter running their Instagram page and making it more like the page that we had built, more around culture and the 18 to 24 year old demographic and really speaking their language. So it's pretty cool, like how a company that we started, you know, my co-founder Elliot had actually started the page in 2013, but the company, when it started 2-3 years ago, we were really ahead of our times when it came to building out a proper network of accounts that targeted that 18 to 24 year old demographic in a really cool way.
And so was the ambition to build like the next generation, you know, basketball themed media company, essentially?
And yeah, just to continue to build out a media company, just we wanted also to build out a network. Like we had friends, obviously, like Buster, who created Hoops Nation, or Jack, who runs Best Crosses. But we noted that none of them were building out a series of different accounts. So right. By the time
so you,
I left,
you were really going for the network.
We had 21 accounts across three platforms, and they weren't even all basketball related. We had @math on Instagram. We had @movement on Instagram. We had @culture on Instagram. Like we had other pages as well, because we saw ourselves as like, what if we could become the one-stop shop for anyone that wanted to promote to the 18 to 24 year old demographic on the internet? And we had the vertical for you to promote through.
And what is the media capital of the world? Arguably New York. And so, New York is like close to my home. I'm Canadian, but I grew up there. I lived there for 7 years early on. And half of my friends are there, and it's a wonderful place. But I'm curious about that. So what enticed you to kind of make the move? Where were you at the time? And then where did you, and then you moved to New York?
So I had moved to New York already, actually. I was doing the summer internship with Trevor and his VC firm, JB Fitzgerald. I was already there. And then I met this great guy named Elliot. I actually met Elliot a year ago. So actually, even before I moved to New York, I met him when I met Gary Vaynerchuk for the first time. I had a 15-minute meeting with Gary, and Elliot had worked for Gary as his head of content and strategy. So helping him blow up pretty much on Instagram was his job. And so Elliot was a young kid. He's the same age as I am. And he's from Sweden. And he didn't go to college. He just like moved from Sweden to the US after Gary found him in Sweden for a talk and was like, I think you should come and work for me. And Elliot was like, great, I graduate next month, I'm moving. So he moved to New York. He's an American citizen as well, though. And I became roommates with him. I vibed with him really well. He introduced me to a lot of great people in New York. I became roommates with him. It's funny because I legitimately just spoke to him like 30 minutes ago. He was actually the person I accidentally came late on for this podcast, but he's in Sweden. I hadn't caught up with him in a while, but he's just a very, very nice person. And he was like, hey, I created this account in 2013. I'd love to make it into a proper business now. I want to, quit working for Gary. Do you want to do this with me? So we decided to not only be roommates, but we decided to also be business partners. And that's how Dunk kind of came up as an opportunity.
And did you raise money or were you just going right into it? All right, coming up, I continue my conversation with Swish Goswami. The ones who succeed will be right back after a brief word from our sponsor. Welcome back to The Ones Who Succeed and my conversation with 22-year-old tech entrepreneur Swish Goswami.
Went right into it. We tried raising $500,000. So we chatted with a bunch of investors like, Brandon Steiner from Steiner Sports and Courtside Ventures and a number of other places. But that was one of my first experiences raising money. And it was a really great experience of what not to do, because we did not come prepared to any one of those meetings. We didn't have projections built out or a forecasted budget built out. We had a deck, but it was just a deck that was like not nuanced whatsoever. It was a deck more around the solution than the problem we were going after. So just a lot of really good takeaways from that helped me with TrueFan when it came to fundraising. I initially thought New York was the place I wanted to live. And I kid you not, by the end of it, like when I moved from New York to Vancouver to start TrueFan, and that would have been in kind of middle of 2018, I just never wanted to go back. Like and the reason why I think is just because like I felt like New York was making me feel small, and maybe it's an ego thing, but I felt like an ant in New York. I felt like I was like a small pawn, whereas I feel like there's a comfort in being up here in Canada and trying to do a big thing because there's not that many people, quote unquote, here, just population wise, but let alone people doing big things. Like you're different here, right? And like, again, going back to the theme of like wanting to be different when I was a child, I feel a lot more different here in Toronto or in Vancouver than I did in New York.
That is hilarious that you brought that up. That is interesting, because part of the draw of New York is the idea that everyone is kind of going after their ambitions, and there's just so much. And so and that's a benefit, because I mean, pre-COVID, the networking opportunities were just phenomenal. Like you just you'd constantly be bumping into people, interesting people, the A-team, world-class people. But the other side of that, like which you were mentioning here, is just the idea that it can kind of wear you down.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not to say like, I don't like competition. I love competition, but I think I want to be competitive about certain parts of my life. I don't want to be competitive about everything. So yeah. I just feel like in New York, there's a race for everything.
And so was this almost moving to Vancouver to start TrueFan? Was this almost like, how different of an environment could I get from New York?
Total opposite.
Was that the idea?
It's total opposite. I mean, again, the initial idea for starting TrueFan in Vancouver was that Onik, my co-founder, you know, he'd finished up his second year at Stanford. He lives in Vancouver. Ryan Holmes, who was, you know, a great supporter of us.
I had Ryan on the pod early on. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. Started Hootsuite, right? And he was a big supporter of us. And he was like, hey, you know what? If you're going to start this company, feel free to do it out of Hootsuite. So gave us office space. And we just felt like from a home, work, life perspective, Vancouver would just be a great place. It'd be comfortable. We wouldn't have to go scrambling to pay rent. We wouldn't have to go scrambling to pay office rent. We'd have a great support system. Let's go there. And so that's actually why we did it. But again, like you mentioned, it's such a difference. It's such a difference from New York, even Toronto. Like the pace of life in Vancouver is fantastic, I think, if you want to live there. It's really tough for someone like me to work there because I do feel like there are a number of fantastic companies in Vancouver. I think the city doesn't do a good job of profiling them really well. Like we know about Lululemon and Hootsuite, but we don't know about like Bloom, for example, and like Smart Suites and all these small up and coming companies that are doing really well there. But I also found that like people were leaving the office at like 5 p.m. and 5:30. And it's just like in an early high growth startup, like I understand the beach is there and I understand it's a beautiful weather and like you want to get outside and you want to enjoy your life. But man, there were a lot of like natural distractions I felt to work that was kind of tough to like retain good talent and bring them in and make sure that they worked hard. So that was one thing that I kind of noted about the difference in pace and lifestyle.
You eventually made the move to Toronto.
Yeah.
And this is this is pre-COVID, right? So this is when, you know, you potentially having a meeting. I remember Onik mentioning that if you had a meeting with Uber Canada, it was just nice to be there in person. And it sounds like it seems like with COVID, that's kind of there's a question mark around that. But it totally makes sense to just from a lifestyle perspective. Do you see yourself living in Toronto for the foreseeable future? You've kind of been all over.
Yeah,
high-paced environment like Toronto or like New York and kind of slower, more chill environment, Vancouver. Where do you see yourself?
I don't know if I'll live in Toronto forever. I definitely would love to have a home in Toronto because my brother's also here and I love him to death and I don't want to be that far from him. But and I think my mom eventually will move from Calgary. Like, you know, she's wrapping up her divorce proceedings right now. And I think once those are done, she'll move to Toronto and she'll love it here. But I think Toronto is one of the best cities in the world, but I do think that depending on where my career goes, if my career goes more towards entertainment after entrepreneurship, which it might, I might want to go to LA. I might want to go to Europe. I don't know where in Europe, but just I might want to move to a whole different continent. But again, my long-term goal has always been politics as well. So if I ever was to get into politics, I'd love to start off in Toronto before going to Ottawa one day.
All right. So this is pre-prime minister proceedings, I take it?
You heard it here first, but no, I don't know about that. Obviously, you don't aim high, but like, I'd love to even start off as like a counselor even and work my way up.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I'm really curious about this. So one of the points I wanted to touch on was this idea that you had, this concept of essentially, and you just mentioned it now, of essentially entertainment and kind of looking at that from a macro, which is like personal brand. So you are in a speaking circuit and you are posting quite a bit of content on LinkedIn. You post content on Instagram, you know, Twitter. Like you seem like you're kind of building up a brand for yourself. And I think that's really interesting, especially I think it's very timely because what you're starting to see now are a lot of high profile creators who weren't really theoretically startup entrepreneurs getting into startups, starting up ventures. And, you know, obviously you are clearly an entrepreneur first, but it seems like you have from a young age have recognized the value of a personal brand. And so am I correct in saying that this has been a conscious effort thus far in regards to personal brand development? And why did you feel the need to kind of go down this route as opposed to kind of just being like a silent founder who's kind of just in the back and the company is your brand?
Yeah, I think it's because there's an ego to feed, right? They're just, you know, I have an ego and I have this kind of idea in my head that I am an expert on certain topics and I'd love to share what those topics are. And whether or not I'm an expert or not, it's up for debate. I don't actually personally think that I'm an expert really in anything. Like, I think I'm very knowledgeable about certain things, but I hate how overused the word expert really is. But I think I know a lot about, you know, mental health and entrepreneurship, especially the early parts of entrepreneurship around starting a business. I feel like I know a lot about politics. I feel like I know a lot about social movements that are happening in the world right now. And I'd love to have an opinion on that too. So I think that was number one, and just kind of realizing that I didn't want to be silent and I did want to talk and I did want to speak and I did want to share my thoughts out openly was a big reason why I decided to consciously start a personal brand. And then I think number two is, I actually do think that your business can really benefit from having an entrepreneur have a personal brand. Like, I think from hiring great people who find out about me or Onyx first, and then they're interested in TrueFan and they want to work for us, or whether it's, you know, clientele, like early clients learning about TrueFan through a LinkedIn post that I made, speaking about the company or speaking about just the overarching concept of influencer marketing. There's a number of benefits that come with building a personal brand up that can tie back to your business and your bottom line. So that was the second big reason as well, as I thought it just went hand in hand. Definitely though, I think one thing is I have seen it sometimes be a distraction. So I think more than ever, especially this year, I've been a lot more focused on the business side versus the personal branding side. I still love doing interviews. I still love speaking, but obviously past COVID, like, my priority is making sure my employees are doing well. We don't have to lay anyone off. The business is growing and the product is continuing to evolve. That's been the core priority, and it's kind of not really freed up a lot of time to do anything else.
This is a very interesting kind of bridge here. What is the ideal work-life balance for you as an operator and a CEO?
It's a tough question. Like, I think between Onyx and I think Onyx does a really good job with work-life balance. I don't think I do as well at the job. I've constantly tried to learn from him. I think it's one thing I can definitely take away from Onyx is just how he balances his work with everything around him. I have kind of an obsession around working. Like, I love working. So, like, whether it's morning or afternoon or night or even past midnight, I love working. I think the one thing I've done a lot of though is just finding other interests and being obsessive about them. So, like, I am very obsessive about a TV show called The West Wing. It's an old drama. It's, like, my opinion, one of the greatest shows of all time. I'm rewatching it now from, like, season one. I'm obsessive about Formula One, and thankfully the Formula One season is happening right now. So every 2 weeks is a race, and I love reading about the races coming up, what sorts of changes the cars have made, drivers that are going to be racing, what's happening on their end. I'm also incredibly obsessive about Call of Duty. So, you know, Onyx and I game almost every night, even for an hour, just also just chill and sync up together.
That's great.
And obviously I love basketball, right? As evidenced by the net in the back. Like, I love basketball. So I find that these interests keep me grounded. I find that they make sure that I'm not working 24/7 and that I'm also doing other things. And through those interests, I've met up with people like my friends and my close friends that can do stuff with me as well, whether it's watching a game, watching a race, or watching a TV show with me. So that's really the way that I go about work-life balance. Is my work is obviously a big obsession of mine, but I find other obsessions and I start to build time for it. And I populate those obsessions with people that are close with me.
I'm very glad you highlighted that, because part of the struggle I think is, you know, this culture of hustle, which I think is awesome. And so, and I think taken the wrong way, you know, the opposite of hustle is being lazy. And I also don't think that's going to do you any good. On the spectrum of, on one side, you could leave work at 5 p.m. and just, you know, chill all day and run a nice lifestyle business. That is, I'd say that's kind of the least aggressive hustle. And there's nothing wrong with that. But and on the other end, you know, this idea of, like, you know, hustle porn, if you will, you really can't, you can't do anything. You're going to have to give up everything to succeed. Where do you fall? And I'm sure this, I'm sure you've moved around on the spectrum.
You nailed it. It's a spectrum, right? I fluctuate. This month, probably closer to the hustle porn side. You know, just we're fundraising, we're potentially acquiring our second company, and we've built out this new product solution that we're deploying next week publicly. Like, there's just a lot happening. So I've been more close towards just really working 24/7. And then last month, I think I was a lot closer towards the lifestyle business, right? Of just, you know, working my normal hours and, you know, meeting up with friends. I had just actually, like, my brother got married last month. You know, he'd gone through eye surgery as well. Thank you. So I was just really trying to be there for him and, like, you know, try to carve out my evening so I can spend time with him. He lives literally right beside me, so there's no excuse. Like, he lives in the condo right beside me. So
cool.
I wanted to see him a lot more. So it fluctuates. I think where I'd like to be is obviously in the middle, but I think it's just also like, you know, in the same way that people that are hustling 24/7 are killing their minds over hustling, I think there are a lot of people that kill their minds over finding a perfect work-life balance, and that just does not exist. Work-life balance, you can't measure it on a day-to-day basis. You measure it on a time, you know, like you measure it across 6 months, across a year, because that's when you're going to know how you fluctuated and where your average truly was. So if you're fluctuating all over the place and you're trying to measure your work-life balance every single day, good luck, but you're only going to make yourself more upset.
I think that's the, you know, there's that kind of goes into this idea of kind of trying to have everything optimized and everything. It's just going to be really difficult. And like you mentioned, you really don't want to spend equal amount of time thinking about how you're going to plan your life versus actually doing it, right? Like, I think that could be a little counterintuitive.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk about a meeting you had in 2017 with Gary Vaynerchuk. I want to highlight this, not because you've met him, which I think is awesome, but because it seemed like in 2017, this would have been right around the time of Dunk. You already had Technotronics that did its thing. You were, seemed like you were, your profile as an entrepreneur was on the rise. And yet you still talked about this perhaps struggle that you were experiencing in your life. And this idea that, you know, some days you might wake up and you're feeling super pumped and you're ready to work, and some days you might wake up and you're just not really feeling it. And I want to highlight this because as an entrepreneur, as someone listening like myself or some of my audience, they'll hear all these really successful people, and then they'll hear you and you're so young and you're doing all these amazing things. But it seems like you do have, you know, similar bad days like anyone else. And so talk about what was going on in 2017. Coming up on the program, my conversation with Swish Goswami continues. Stick with us. The ones who succeed will be right back after a brief word from our sponsor. You're listening to The Ones Who Succeed and my conversation with Swish Goswami. Welcome back to the program. I'm Campbell Barron. And so talk about what was going on in 2017.
It happens even now. I didn't actually like the answer Gary gave me. And I've publicly said that even to him after. Like, I've had the honor, obviously, of speaking alongside him after. And then he's actually now a client of ours, right? So his you know, Team Gary V uses our product, and we've had great interactions with him over it. But the question I asked him in 2017 was, hey, you know, there are times when I wake up and I don't feel like I want to get out of bed. Like, I don't feel energetic and ready to go. And his answer to me was, you're probably not doing something you're passionate about. And I agree with that to an extent. I think obviously being passionate about your work will on most days help you get out of bed and at least get to the shower. And after the shower, you'll feel great. Or after your, you know, morning cup of coffee, you'll feel fine. But the reason I didn't like the answer entirely is because I think it's also a dangerous precedent to set, to say that the minute you find something you're passionate about, every problem in your life will go away. That is not true. Like, even if you're working on something incredibly passionate, the stakes and the risk can even go higher because you're so scared of losing out on being able to continue to do that, that you continue to want to work hard to not lose your baby that you're so passionate about. So for me, like, I still have days where I'm not a morning person, which probably doesn't help, right? I'm more of a night owl, but I still have days throughout the week where I have a tough time getting up at 8 a.m., you know, and I have a really tough time getting to the shower because I feel groggy and I feel tired, or I don't feel like I'm amped and ready to go. And I feel like this whole mindset of like every single day, if you're working on something you're passionate about, you're going to wake up and you're going to look in the mirror and be like, I'm passionate, I'm amped, and I'm ready to go. Let's hustle. Let's go. Let's work. It's just not true. And it's a dangerous precedent, I think, to set in the world. So that's definitely something that I've talked a lot about too, and just like, even if you're working on something you're passionate about, please note that you can abuse your mental health. And if you do that, you are likely going to not, you know, be able to work on whatever it is you're passionate about as much, and at least to the same level of quality as you might want to. So just because you're working on something you're passionate about doesn't mean that all your problems in life go away.
Before I respond to this, I'm curious, what was, what, How did Gary, how did he respond to that?
Yeah, he's fine with that. I think the problem is that I think Gary realizes that his messaging sometimes is also put out and it's over-exaggerated. So a lot of his views are actually a lot more nuanced than might have come across in like a 10, 15 minute interview or like a 2 minute ad. He obviously recognizes that A, not everyone has the ability to work on something they're incredibly passionate about. Financial constraints, you know, student debt, stuff like that exist. And sometimes people have to take a job that is really shitty, but pays well. And they have to do that to as like a stepping stone to work into something they're passionate about later on. But B, even when people are passionate about something, I think he very much recognizes that people can be burnt out. They can lose focus. Distractions come up. Your personal life comes up. And it can obviously bog you down. So again, I think a lot of what Gary's content does is sometimes paint a very one-sided view of who he is. Whereas I think a lot of his keynotes and his talks do an incredible job in showing him as like a well-rounded, kind of reasonable person that isn't just about hustling all the time, but also taking time out for your family, which is something he does at a very high level. You know, he's a very good family person as well.
How is... and I listened to an interview you did. I had Michael Hyde on the program, like a few, and I know you're super tight with him, Adam. Yeah. I think it was like in the summer, and pre-interview, he told me to listen to a couple interviews, and one of them was with you. And this was kind of early pandemic when you were talking about how TrueFan responded to the COVID crisis. So I'm curious to hear, as we kind of gear into the end of this program, I'm curious to hear, how is TrueFan doing now from what you can tell me? And how has COVID affected the business?
Yeah, I'll be very transparent with you. I mean, COVID has been it's definitely had a silver lining. It's been tough on our employees. It's been tough on me personally. It's been tough on Onik personally because of families. And then, you know, we've tried to do as much as we can to mitigate the harms of that. But just on from a business side, like it's been fairly positive. You know, more and more businesses are coming online now. And they're looking for tools like ours that are affordable, easy to use, that aren't just built for data scientists, but they're actually built for marketeers or just CEOs or first-time entrepreneurs that want to understand their following on social media. And so we've done a great job of putting out a very affordable pricing plan since April. We've now brought on close to about 700 customers in the last, you know, 4 or 5 months to that pricing plan. We've put out a free plan as well. We've gotten over 5,000 free users. We're getting about 2,000 free users a month that are coming on organically, nothing through paid ads whatsoever. And then a lot of what we're trying to do now is I think we've done a great job of building a very affordable, easy to use segmentation platform. What we're really trying to do now in the latter half of 2020 and pushing into 2021 is getting into first party data. So we've noted that COVID has shown a lot of problems in third party advertising. It's shown that ad blockers are at an all-time high. It's shown that platforms like TikTok are on the verge of being shut down or are at risk. It's shown that platforms like Instagram and Facebook are under incredible scrutiny now more than ever due to the social dilemma, for example, and a bunch of other things. It's shown that third-party cookies are going to be taken away from Safari, Firefox, and Chrome. So the question becomes, if all of these changes are happening to an advertiser's preferred advertising platform, what can an advertiser do to truly own their audience? To make sure that if a platform does change or go away, how can I still own the audience that I've cultivated on that platform? And that's what first party data does, getting email addresses, phone numbers, mailing addresses from your followers in a consensual opt-in way. And that's exactly what we're trying to push towards with this fundraising round and the potential acquisition that we're going to wrap up in November.
Was the team work from home pre-COVID? Was that the deal?
Yeah, so pre-COVID, we were at the DMZ because we were going through the DMZ Accelerator in Toronto. But we did have some members of our team that worked remotely. Like we have our CFO who's in Billings, Montana. You know, Karen, our CMO is in Ottawa. So we were kind of used to working with like a semi-remote team. And then after COVID, obviously everyone started working remotely and we love it. We're planning to work remotely until January 2021. And then even beyond that, we haven't decided yet, but we haven't kind of seen any sort of like, you know, negative effects from working remotely other than like we miss each other and we want to see each other in person. But, you know, that is the circumstances of life right now.
As we wrap up here, I have a few more questions for you, and you've been so generous with your time, so I appreciate it. Do you ever see yourself just, you know, perhaps taking a break, settling down, or do you think that, you know, 30 years from now, there'll be an additional, you know, 20 companies on your LinkedIn profile. And that's kind of, and you know, there's no, like, I'm not even joking. Like, I think I know people who just don't stop, and that works for them. But what do you see in your future in the next, you know, 15 years, let's say?
Great question. I mean, look, I don't want to make the mistakes my father did, which was focus only on his career and nothing else. You know, I want to make sure that if I meet a special person, I spend time with them. If I one day have a family, I spend time with my family. I make sure I provide for them. And providing for them doesn't just mean monetarily. It means, you know, emotionally as well, and giving time and attention to them. But I'm 23 at the end of the day right now. So it's a tough question to ask, because I'm not close to the age that I want to get married at. I haven't met that special person yet, you know, so if anyone is listening, feel free to reach out. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, I don't have kids that I know off. Like, I'm not kidding, but I legitimately don't have all of these concerns and not concerns, but I guess priorities and responsibilities that, you know, 28-year-old or 30 or 32-year-old would have. So my short answer to that is I want to keep going. I want to see how fast I can move. I want to see how far I can go and go from there.
Swish, you've been so generous with your time. I really appreciate it. Great to get to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Dylan. Thank you.
That's Swish Goswami, one of the ones who succeed. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this show, it would be amazing if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. Or why not tell a friend? That also helps new listeners discover the show. I really appreciate it. If you want to see clips from the show and stay up to date with what I'm working on, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm at Campbell J. Barron. You've made it to the end of the show. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Campbell Barron, and I'll be back in no time.